Well, new research out today shows that Australia's biggest companies aren't doing enough to promote gender equality at the top. Data from the 2020 Chief Executive Women ASX 200 Senior Executive Census reveals the number of women in senior leadership roles has flatlined. Just one of the 25 newly minted CEO positions went to a woman in the past year. Sue Morfitt is the President of Chief Executive Women. Sue Morfitt, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran. Thank you.
Sue, of the 200 companies you surveyed, you found just 10 have a woman in charge, and that number is stubbornly low. In fact, I think it's a bit lower than when we've looked at this in past years. Why? What's going on?
First of all, I don't think that we're treating this seriously. We treat having women in senior executive roles as a nice to have, not a must have. There's been research that shows, and we can talk about that, but from Wajir and Bankwest and Curtin University released this year, that shows that balanced businesses do better, and yet we're not treating it seriously enough to solve the problem. Women hit roadblocks when they go through their careers, and they don't get through to the line roles at executive level or the CFO roles at executive level that are the feeder roles leading into the CEO. So the numbers are appallingly low. 96% of these feeder roles, it's the CFO and the profit and loss line roles, are the ones that give us the CEOs. Mm-hmm. And yet women are only represented in 12% of the line roles, 16% of the CFO roles. And worse still, two-thirds of the Australian ASX 200 companies do not have any women in these line role leadership pipelines. So it's an abject disaster if you want to be a senior woman, to be honest, right now, unless you belong and work in a handful of companies that are doing it really well.
Okay, but why aren't women, more women in what you call these line roles? Why aren't there more women CFOs? If that's the feeder to a CEO, what is the blockage? Is it that women themselves initially in their careers don't find themselves attracted to that sort of financial element of the business, or they're not being selected to be mentored and streamed there?
Quite to the contrary, about attracted to the jobs. Uh-huh. Women, girls, in Australia, are all well-educated across every level. So they all leave school, they go on and do good training, they go to university. Every one of them has equal aspirations to those of men. So they leave their training ready to go. But they then hit the roadblocks, and they are the following. One, there is they take time out to care, particularly for children, and we don't encourage them back into full-time work enough to be able to hop back into the slipstream and build their mastery. So our childcare system needs to be modified, and we could talk forever on that, but if we could get the government to adjust that so that it supported full-time working versus part-time working, then we would have more women. We would break that bubble, and many, many more women would go through into full-time work. And you're not promoted from 3 days a week. You're promoted from 4 days or 5 days. That's
okay,
an absolute fact.
I'll come to the other blockages, but just to stay with that one for a moment, it is a particular time in a child's life. A lot of women want to spend some more time. A lot of mothers want to spend some more time with their babies and their toddlers at this time. So they're not necessarily rushing back to full-time, or do you think that's a myth?
I don't think that women are rushing back, but when they want to go back, it's their financial disincentives stop them from going back, so they stay in part-time.
And the cost of childcare, you mean?
With the cost of childcare and the taxation intersection of that. So they lose family support and so forth, so that when they work on the fourth day, they may only take home 20% of their pay packet, and when they work on the fifth day, it may even cost them to go to work. So it's not worth their while, so they don't, and it takes them a long time to step back in. And so at the end of the day, there's a 27% gap between full-time male participation rate and full-time female participation rate. And then you put over and above that the other blockages that get in the way, and you can see why there are fewer women reaching the top. And the point is, if we don't have the women at the top, we're not getting decisions made that are looked at through gender lenses, broader brush understanding of consumer bases and markets, and so forth. And so we're not getting the full benefit of the whole talent pool available.
Is one of the blockages still that, you know, we basically employ who we know, we employ in our own likeness? Is that still,
Absolutely.
Is that changed? Because we've been talking about this for decades.
Oh, you bet we have. We're trying, and good companies, and there's a handful of them, they are really working hard to make sure that their recruitment practices and processes are not biased, and that they have men and women in all of the pools of talent that they're choosing from, and men and women on the recruitment team. But at the moment, it is more likely, and the figures show us that it's still more likely, that that we fall into the merit trap of employing someone that looks like, sounds like, and has the same experiences as the person who is making the hiring decision.
Okay, and that just doesn't affect women, of course. That's a whole lot of things. Just finally, this pandemic has upended a lot of things. Suddenly, men and women find themselves working from home, having to share more of the homeschooling and the load more broadly. Do you think that's going to change the expectations of who takes up the flexible work options and open up the talent pool?
Yep. On the upside, you would have to say you would hope so, because flexibility and remote work has been legitimised over COVID. So we've seen CEOs of large companies literally working from the dining room table and doing a very good job. So we've shown that you can do job, you can trust your workforce to work hard without them necessarily being in the office. So that's the upside. The downside is that we have to be careful that when people start going back to work, it's not all the male managers who do so, such that all the young men coming through think that they have to be back in the office, and it reinforces again the pink ghetto that flexibility has often been perceived to be. Okay. So we have to work hard now to make sure that that stays. If it does stay, it will be an amazing benefit for men and for women who want to participate more in the caring and still do their work.
Sue Morford, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran. Thanks very much.
Sue Morford is President of Chief Executive Women. She's an experienced CEO herself.